Welcome to Print Radio Tasmania. My name is Tony Freeman, and today I'm going to be talking to three people involved with blind and limited vision cricket: Philip Drury, David Hughes, who's the captain of the team, and Dylan Gangell. Philip Drury is Chief Executive Officer of Inclusive Innovations Tasmania. Philip, welcome. And would you just like to tell us a little bit about your role and how you've become so involved in
blind cricket? Thanks, Tony. Great to be here. Thanks for the opportunity. Yeah, as the CEO of Inclusive Innovations Tasmania, we're a quite unique not-for-profit, not a support sector entity as such. Our board has come together really to put together initiatives in the inclusion space where no one either can or maybe has the resources to do so. So we have half a dozen initiatives, but the leading one in many ways is this sports-related blind and low vision cricket. So how it came about was I actually have a background in cricket, an ex-president of a local club, also an ex-member of Taverners Australia, the leading charity for disability cricket. So when I went to the National Cricket Inclusion Championships in 2020, just before COVID hit, it was strikingly obvious that Tasmania did not have a blind and low vision team, representative team. So we came back and put together some really passionate people to then build the program. The training sessions started about 2 years ago, and then that really, long story short, culminated with a team squad selection of Tasmanian Tigers players to play with some ACT players as a dual TAS ACT team in the National Inclusion Cricket Championships just back in February.
All right. So now you had a little bit of a background in cricket. I heard you say, oh, let's go a bit deeper into that, Philip. Were you a batsman or a bowler?
Neither. Yes, failed from the point of view of outdoor cricket. Yeah, some of us, like my skills, would play indoor cricket. But I was always, and I'm a business-skilled person, I suppose, and in the creative space. So I realised very quickly I could do a lot more for the team off the field, if you like. So I've been administrator for probably 20 years.
Now, you said you looked for some passionate people. Where did you find those passionate people?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because we actually had to start from scratch. So when you map this out, probably like your organisation, you've got to find a whole lot of committed volunteers and entities that you can connect with to get the message out there, again, like your good selves. Mm. So we did a lot of social media, and we were learning very quickly how to engage with people that are blind and low vision. So we connected with people like Vaughan Bennison and entities like the Guide Dogs and Visibility Tasmania. We certainly had early conversations with your good selves here to get the message out. But what I found really interesting was it was probably no surprise, very relationship-based, so to speak. So once you formed a relationship with someone that they could trust in what you were doing, then, and it's very Tasmanian, isn't it? They'd pass that information on down, you know, through their relationship networks, if you like. So interestingly, that we probably had 10 to a dozen, say, players, or even potential competition players, probably come out within the first year.
Okay. Now, David, whom we'll speak to in a minute, is the captain, but do you have a coach, or does David do that as well?
Yes. So as I think about all the effort that was put in and the structure of it, you know, the word really is best practice. This is not a disability support sector program, with respect. It is niche cricket. I'd invite anyone to Google blind cricket, blind and low vision cricket, and you will be amazed. Mm-hmm. It is quite.
We
often use the word brutal sport, not because they're not skilled. They are super skilled, adaptive players to the space. So I think what's been really interesting is to watch the coach, coming back to our structure, to actually have, say, myself as the manager. We have a leading coach who's actually just been named coach for the first Australian side to travel to Birmingham. So that's Taylor Purton. And she also has all those qualities around the human-centred side, if you like. So, yes, we have professional coaching. And then we have a team of volunteers across coaching, training, but also across things like fundraising and social media and things like that. So we basically approach it as a business, even though we don't have any money,
right?
As such,
yeah. So where does the funding that you do get? Where does that come from?
Yeah. So early days, we're very thankful for some funds that came from Cricket Tasmania. You'd say just as a to establish some things, and we say establish. Everyone knows insurances and all kinds of costs. Pretty much, actually, if I quantify that, we need to find about $15,000 to $20,000 a year,
yes,
to make it cost neutral for the players, or very, very low. And so, again, we're not looking for charity; we're looking for opportunity. So, yeah, to answer your question, we have a fundraising dinner where we had Graham Innes come down and speak, and other leading people. We do general fundraising, and that'll be ramped up this year. We also do look for grants. So again, not to be counterintuitive, if people will offer us a so-called disability sport grant, we'll take it.
Yeah.
But again, we look to the mainstream. We have sponsors, and we very proudly were able to attract iLines and even work on a national level there. But yeah, so that's where we attract our funds, and we do hope in the next few years to have, I suppose you'd say, cash reserves. So then we'll move from just, if you like, an initiative to an association. That's the strategy.
And I've got looked at, you've got the website's very good, and obviously you talked about that in your development plans, and you also talked about taking it to outside communities, and I noticed there were pictures of a couple of schools there where you tried that. So is that something that you looked at doing more in the future as
well? Thanks, you've done your research, Tony. Thank you. The Blind Cricket Tasmania website, which of course you can just find by Googling, it's pretty outrageously good. We've had, when I say mainstream, everything we do, some leading designers in this space and developers develop that site. It's extraordinary. It was also funded by a private trust, if you like. Right. So she's no cheapie. But again, it was gifted to us, so that should be recognised. But also, obviously, very proud of it, everyone is. But, you know, it's got technologies on there, like people can just leave a voice message, send us an email, the site, you know, talks to you, all that kind of stuff. But, yeah, back to your question. Now that we realise we've got such a high-value asset like that or platform, we're able to, if you like, present our activities, or even you could say products in a way. So it was amazing that we got to do a coaching clinic with David and Dylan came to that with Hutchins and Collegiate combined school. So they all got to wear the simulation glasses, which takes their vision down to 5 or 10%. I think we had about four stations, so to speak. There was probably 20, 25 students. So we encouraged schools to reach out to us. And to put the business on it, we asked them to make a small donation. This is where I say I can spruik our GoFundMe page, which again, just search for that. And for a very, very small fee, but just to recognise the value, if you like, of learning about, you know, these adaptive sports and to play blind cricket, it was a fantastic opportunity.
It was, yeah. And that's, and the interesting thing is, it seems to me from looking, they are mixed gender teams, basically. Well, I don't know if I want to use that term these days anyway.
Again, Tony, you're really asking the really sharp question. So I'll go back one to go forward, which is people go blind cricket, how do they play cricket?
Yeah.
No elephant in the room. It's blind and low vision. Yes. So in any team, you have four B1s. They're totals. They're totally blind. B2s, generally, we say layman's terms, 5% vision. B3s, 10% vision. This form of cricket particularly does not discriminate, if I can use that word. It is all ages. It is all abilities. It's all gender identification. And cricket is, as the phrase is, a sport for all, as Cricket Australia would want us to recognise. But blind cricket, by the nature of it, does seem to attract more inclusivity. It's very interesting. So that's at, call that community level.
Yes.
But at national level, the teams at the moment are mixed gender. And we were very proud to have two females in our TAS ACT team. In fact, both of those were from Tasmania. So we welcome, and if I do a call out, people can find us on the website, have a good look. They can call me and others, and we invite everyone and anyone with a blind or low vision. And we don't discriminate, if you like, on low vision, whatever that is. It's only competition level where you come under criteria. Yeah. So
in looking into the very near future, what's your next major project?
Yeah, It is to build the team. It is to recruit as a project. That is number one. We'll always have the fundraising on the side. So we do look for, again, not so much, we would say, charity. We're looking for relationships. We're looking for partnerships. We find mutual benefit in many, many of these partnerships where we can come and help educate and do other activities with sponsors and that. We have built a brand, if I just go there, but we are wanting to develop what we'll call B and LV cricket brand. Yes. Currently the name, funny enough, doesn't represent the game. So one of our big projects is actually to start a brand or initiative of B and LV cricket as a brand, but also attracting the general public to some of our come and try days to wear the simulation glasses and come and have a crack with us.
Right. So you just use the community grounds at the moment. You don't, you haven't got any special venues.
Yeah, I think, again, as I often reflect on the huge amount of effort that we put in place, particularly relationships and access to grounds and facilities, was we aligned ourselves with three major clubs around the state. So Ulverston Cricket Club, Launceston Cricket Club, and down here North Hobart Cricket Club. Right. Now, each one of those also have an indoor cricket facility, quite modern, which allows us to play all year round. Mm-hmm. And that's very, very deliberate reason for that. Yeah, we will currently, and we again invite people to look on the website, connect with us on social media, Facebook, because we will be doing quite a few come and try days around the state, again, as another probably project alluding to. So the access to community grounds, we do often train towards the end of the year towards the championships on council grounds, of which we pay, which is fine. But again, we reach out to even schools and other regional areas. And if they've got a pitch, which must be a synthetic pitch, by the way, concrete or synthetic pitch, the way the game is played, we can play anywhere.
Oh, good. That's been great. That people have been listening to the people talk about. Let's talk to someone now who actually is involved in the game. So we might get David across now. Welcome, David, and just tell us what happened to you, how you've become involved in blind and low vision cricket.
Well, it's a bit of a story.
I want to hear the story, David.
I've got something called retinitis pigmentosa, which is a genetic disease. So basically, over the years, I've been getting tunnel vision, basically lost the peripheral vision. I used to play a bit of cricket when I was young. I always loved cricket, but I had to give up in the end. But I've always been fascinated about the fact of maybe trying to get back into some form of cricket of some sort, and I heard about blind cricket balls. So I thought, well, I wonder if you can get any around Hobart. So I went into the Moona cricket place they've got out there, and I went up to the counter and I said to the person, you haven't got any blind cricket balls? And they said, no. And there was a gentleman behind me who said, you didn't say blind cricket, did you? I said, yeah. And he said, oh, I know someone who might be organising some stuff. Can I have your phone number? And I said, all right. And didn't think much of it and wandered off. And then a few days later, Sonny phoned up.
Oh, right. So Sonny is Philip.
Philip. And so it was a bit of a surprise. And then it's just been a journey from there, which has been very, very enjoyable and very fulfilling.
That's fantastic. But so what's your specialty?
Well,
in the game.
You see, this is the difficulty with this game, is the fact that it's the same as cricket but different to cricket in the sense of, with bowling, for example, it's underarm, not overarm.
Yes.
So I had to relearn that because I kept naturally wanting to put the arm over.
Have a chat to Trevor Chaffell, did you?
Yeah, that's right. Get some hints. Saying that, going to the championships I went to, some of the bowling is 100 miles an hour. These balls are flying around like bullets. Mm. But anyway, so I had to get used to that. Then with the batting, it's getting used to the different strokes because it's not like the usual kind of batting.
No. I had a look at that. So it's more cross bat than straight bat. Would I be correct in saying that?
That's right, especially with the B1s, because they're getting nearer to where the ball, they can hear the ball, and also playing more of a kind of a pull type thing or a sweep type shot. And I still stand, but I'm learning more to do a sweep, right. You know, that sweeping as well. So basically just the moment, doing a lot of crash course learning and just doing a bit of both, yeah. really, with the bowling
yeah. and it might be useful at this point to explain those categories again, the B1s, B2s and B3s and the makeup of the team.
Yeah. Yeah. So with the you've got the four B1s mm-hmm. and then the...
So the B1s are totally white, right?
Exactly. And then you've got the four B2s and the three B3s. Mm-hmm. Now, with the B1s, especially with fielding,
yes,
obviously they can't move out of a certain area because they can't hear the ball.
Right. Oh, I see. Yes.
And the ball being hollow with little ball bearings in it. Same size as a cricket ball, white. So they tend to feel close. They actually usually put in a kind of grid formation. They wear helmets.
I see, yeah.
They wear padding. Yeah. And there's a reason for this, because when people hit the ball, it sounds a bit like golf, when someone whacks a ball at golf. When the person's really highly skilled how to play the game, these balls fly off like bullets. And
right.
One of our players from the ACT team actually got hit in the helmet, so it just showed, you know, the importance of protection. So everyone's protected properly, so they...
So in that grid, are there many catches taken in that grid with the B1s?
I've seen catches.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because the instincts. Yeah, it's a very instinctive game as yes. well. Also, certain sides, for example, the New South Wales side, actually have an internal competition. So they can pick from a big pool, and they're highly trained. When you watch them play, you can see people moving to cover other people to, you know, behind them and stuff like that. So it's like a well-oiled machine, really.
Yes.
It's amazing.
Yeah. I was amazed when the few clips that I have seen. But the thing I did notice was there's a lot of talking, and obviously you rely on those commands.
Yep.
Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah.
So when the, for example, B1's bowl.
Yes.
The wicket keeper stands there and rattles the stumps first. The bowler knows the direction, like a radar type thing. And then he says his name three times, sort of like Jeff, Jeff, Jeff. Mm-hmm. And then you go through the process of bowling, which is the bowler says, "Are you ready?" to the batsman. The batsman says, "Ready." And then as the bowler's bowling, he goes, "Play."
Nice.
And so, yeah, all that happens, and yeah. And so there's a lot of talking.
Yes, there's a lot of talk, and the batsman has to pick up the line and the length, basically, from that, from the talking and listening to the ball.
Listening to the ball.
Is the ball hard?
As I say, the ball's hollow.
Yes.
So, but it is hard, and we were actually playing on the thing I found was that it was an enormous step up because we were playing on turf wickets, which. For years played on a turf wicket. The umpires were first grade umpires, so top umpires. Mm-hmm. So when you stepped into it, we were with elite sportsmen.
Yes.
This wasn't kind of just people just, you know, just doing something for the fun. These are people taking it very seriously. Off the pitch, everyone's, you know, it was fantastic. It was a wonderful atmosphere because you're actually with a whole group of people that understood how hard it is to exist sometimes in our society. But
crossing the line, white line fever.
Exactly. It was very, very competitive.
Oh, yep. Okay. Now, there are some rule variations, aren't there, which apply, which it obviously as a captain you'd have to be aware.
Yeah, there are, but actually it's nearly all the same rules.
Right.
Now, we've got the you can have LBW.
Yes. So B1's are subject to LBWs?
Yep. Basically, it's cricket
mm-hmm.
without any changes to the major rules, with another layer of another thing over the top of it just to compensate for the fact of, you know, what we are. But
so I'm just thinking about things like run outs and stumpings where, you know, some players may not be aware of where the lines are. Is there any leniency or latitude given there?
Well, running's an interesting one because with the B1s mm-hmm. and the B2s, we can have runners.
Oh, right.
Okay. So basically you'd have, for example, Dylan, who's young and fit, yeah. he'd be a runner. So once, for example, B1 hits a shot, The runner says run, and so he runs. So the B1 or B2 player, once he plays his shot, just stands where he is.
I see.
And then the runners work out what to do from there.
Oh, yeah.
So that's the thing with running. Yep.
So tell us, at the recent carnival, tell us about your best day, David. What was that in terms of cricket? Not what happened after cricket, what happened on the field.
Yeah.
Cricket on the field.
Well, we actually, it was a baptism of fire because we had two sides meet up.
Yes.
We hadn't trained together and so forth. But we actually played one match, and I think it was Western Australia. And it was, we had them after 10 overs really well controlled. The run rate hadn't gone berserk. It was something like 80-something.
Yes.
And it was suddenly felt like we were playing as a team. And that was, you know, that was the point where I thought, okay, I think everyone's starting to get a handle of how this all works. Because it's you know, going to a different place, playing on turf wickets.
Oh, yeah.
It's Queensland.
Yeah, I know. You've got all those contingencies to deal with. It's tricky, isn't it? Yeah.
But once the team started, you know, you felt like it was starting to really click.
Yeah.
I could, you know, it was great, and you could see the future. And for the first round effort, you know, the first time effort, a lot of the sides came up to us and said, look, well done, guys, you know. We know where you're coming from.
And that's what team sport's all about, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So, look, thanks. We'll have a chat to Dylan as well. We might come back to you. Thanks for coming and talking to us.
Oh, no problems at all. Yeah.
Now we're going to speak with Dylan Gangell, who was a member of the team at the recent National Carnival. Dylan, first of all, just tell us a little bit about your pathway into it and what happened to you and why you're eligible to play.
Well, 2 years ago I had a cancer that took my eyesight away from me, as well as my short-term memory. So it's left me with tunnel vision as well as David.
I see. And so what category are you, Dylan?
B3.
So tell us about how you got involved in cricket.
Elsa, vision manager, my name was given to her.
Well, I see.
She led us to Sonny, which is...
Philip?
Philip, yes.
So for that, for listeners, Philip's name is referred to as Sonny by all and sundry, except me. I'm the only one who hasn't called him Sonny. So have you got a specialty, Dylan, in terms of cricket?
All round.
Yeah. And so... do you have a favourite player in cricket, in internationally at all?
No, not yet.
No. So what about in normal cricket, if you follow that at all?
No, I can't watch TV.
No, so. I see, but okay.
Yeah.
So who impressed you most in the carnival? Did you see someone who was really impressive?
Definitely New South Wales players.
Yeah, okay. And so in terms of the carnival, what was your best day?
My best day was when I bowled a wicket for two overs, 10 runs, one out.
So you bowl in the T20 format, do you bowl two overs each?
Well, you get the chance to bowl two overs.
Yes.
And that's what I did. So.
Okay. And you have to the ball has to bounce twice. Can you bowl straight along the ground?
You can.
Yeah. And so what do you like to do as far as bowling? What's your technique?
Straight, definitely fast straight.
Just fast and straight?
Yeah.
And has anyone put a speed gun on your balls?
No, not yet. No.
Your balls, yeah. And so we were talking to David about the talking. Are you a good communicator on the field?
Very good communicator, definitely.
Right. And so where do you field normally?
On the outskirts.
Outskirts, yeah. And so when the ball's coming to you as a fielder, do you rely on the sound solely?
Definitely.
And is it hard to judge the height?
It definitely can be, because if it goes up above your head, you lose the ball with the clouds.
And have you been hit when you've been fielding at all?
No, not yet.
Okay. And what do you think you'd like to do in the future? How do you think you'd like to progress your game?
I'd love to get better at batting and bowling and fielding.
Right. And have you got a good coach at the moment?
Brilliant coach.
Who's that?
Taylor.
Taylor?
Yes.
And how often do you see – in the off-season, are you still doing some work?
Yeah, I'm personal trainer, which is Taylor.
Oh, I see. And so you – where do you live at the
West
moment?
West Moona.
Oh, so, and you can train down there at Moona and with the North Hobart Club?
Yeah.
Okay. And so North Hobart cricket is good with you?
Yeah, beautiful with us.
Yeah.
So.
And what about your batting? What's your favourite shot?
Just sweeps.
Sweeps down onto the ground. Onto the leg side. Yeah. And have you thought about playing straight bat shots at all, standing up to the
ball? Yeah, I've played a few of them shots. So.
Did you play cricket before your illness?
For school as well as with a few mates.
Right. And you like to whack the ball then?
Yeah,
Were you a fast bowler?
Beautiful bowler.
And you're just as fast now?
Yeah, definitely.
And so you'd like to go to the next National Carnival?
Yeah.
And does that involve you getting involved in fundraising as well?
Yeah, well, I assume so, because I work for Matt and he's one of the supporters.
So who's Matt? Matt
Drake. He's a cleaner.
All right. And you work as a cleaner? Yes. So you're working and playing and... So you can support yourself. So you I suppose there's some costs involved.
Yeah.
Now, definitely. Do you wear pads when you're batting?
Yes. It's one of the things you have to do. To be wearing.
No. And any other protection?
Well, yeah. Yes. And then there's the gloves.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Hmm. Well, that's great. Look, thanks for coming in, Dylan. Thanks, David. And thanks to Philip. I've learned a lot.
Yes.
I hope. You know, blind and low vision cricket really develops and you get more players, and perhaps a local competition would be good, wouldn't it?
Be great.
Yeah, it'd be great. Thanks very much.
Thank you.